Hello, funky listeners, and welcome to another episode of Funk Radio. This is your host, Kyle.
And this is your host, Peter.
I love that whenever I do that intro, I always do it in like that soft college jazz radio DJ voice. This is KJazz 3.5 with your host, Smooth Pete. You know?
That's fair. I mean, I've kind of developed that goofy, what I call the listener's voice.
Yeah.
The one that I always use when I address the listeners.
Hello, funky listeners. You have like, you pull like a southern
thing.
Hello,
funky listeners.
Yeah, you turn into fucking Barney. I love you. What are we talking about today, Barney?
There was, I don't remember exactly how I discovered this recently, but back in 1969, very long time ago, in case you didn't know, there was a song by the funk soul group The Winstons, who I don't even know if we've ever mentioned on this show.
They weren't, I don't think so,
super popular. They had a song called Amen Brother. And while the song itself I don't think is that well known by its own right, there is a short drum break about halfway through the song, which ironically has become the most sampled track in music history. This drum break apparently has been used over 2,200 times in practically all genres for the last 40-ish years, 50 years. I'm bad at math. So I thought that was kind of interesting because I think it ties in a little bit to things that we've discussed before. Not in the last episode, but in the past few episodes recently, we were talking a lot about sampling and kind of the implications behind that. And ownership of samples and whatnot. I want to say in the far past in the show, we've discussed songs that became more popular simply because they were sampled by something that was super popular, whereas the original song wasn't that mm-hmm. well known. I would argue that if, you know, this drum break in Amen Brother hadn't been sampled so many times, that this song may very well not be well known at all.
Yeah, I would almost say that because this song has been sampled so many times, it's probably more well known than it would be otherwise, but it's probably not even that well known even with it, because when you sample something like that so many times, it becomes lost in the ether, kind of. I mean, especially yeah. as you were saying, it's a 6-second drum break loop in the song that turned into a loopable drum break. That so it's not even like the singer or anything,
it's not a recognizable part of that specific song.
Exactly. Yeah, I think because of that, I mean, it is a catchy drum break, and it's one that once you, it's like the Wilhelm scream in movies, where I don't know if you listeners know what we're referencing. In a lot of movies since I want to say like the 50s, they use this one very specific sound effect called the Wilhelm scream. It's one of those things where once you hear it, you will notice it every time it's in a movie. And I think this is the musical version of the Wilhelm scream.
It very well could be, yeah. I mean, as being that it is, that Amen Brother is the most sampled track in music history, I guess there is nothing else that would top this
mm-hmm.
by that same standard.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you could say that. Before we go any further, for context, we're going to play a short clip from Amen Brother so that you can hear what that drum break sounds like.
I've heard that so many times, and I just assumed that it was some sort of like drum, or I guess what you would call like a, almost like a, like it, when you play guitar, you have chords and scales. I almost thought it was like a scale for drums or something that people would just, you know, inadvertently learn in learning how to play the drums, I guess, and because that it was so popularized, it just ended up in a lot of music. But I didn't realize that it was all originated from a single song.
Yeah, and I mean, it's that's something I was, you know, thinking we might get into in this episode, is talking about how kind of generic it is.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've heard this discussion, this a similar argument made with other I don't know how to say this. Like when you have a certain melody that's used in like dozens of songs over the course of several decades. I know there's been a few cases. Actually, you know, a good example would be the that Led Zeppelin trial this last summer.
Oh yeah.
When really they were let go for that because, you know, the melody that they were being sued for was proven to, you know, have been used many other times.
Even before.
And so not any one band owned that. And so I know there's in similar arguments with, you know, similar cases as this, there's always the argument of, you know, is there really ownership of that thing because it's so generic or like able to be used so commonly because it's so basic. Mm-hmm. That particular argument isn't really wholly relevant here, only because interesting fact with this, nobody who worked on this song, including the performer, the drummer, or the copyright owner, have ever received any royalties for use of this sample. Mm-hmm. You know, not only have they not ever received anything, but they've never really taken any serious legal action against anyone for it. So in that case, you know, if they don't care that much, then I guess the argument of ownership doesn't really matter that much.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's still something worth thinking about just because it's something that comes up so often with these sort of things.
Yeah. Yeah. The owner, I guess the copyright owner, Richard Spencer, has even been quoted as saying that, you know, music works based on that sample are at the same time plagiarism and flattering. So, mm-hmm. you know, to go after 2,000 plus artists for royalties for a 6-second drum break seems a little, seems a little fickle. So it's, he's probably just like, you know, oh, that's cool. It became a drum break in the '80s. Now everyone uses it. I'm the most famous unknown person ever. The funny thing is that apparently, a couple of British DJs, Martin Webster and Steve Theobald, actually set up a GoFundMe page to try to raise money for Spencer in lieu of royalties. And as of right now, they have raised 24,000 British pounds. So,
which translates to $30,000 ish.
It's not bad. It's like
and change
half a year's average half a year's salary, I suppose. If he tried to pursue that in any amount, he'd probably make millions, but it's just like, what's the point, you know?
Right, yeah.
It seems like he's kind of taking the opposite route of that other artist we talked about, Sly something, the guy that had the guitar.
Oh, Sile Johnson.
Thank you, Sile Johnson. Yeah, that's it. Who, he had a really famous guitar, I guess, riff that was sampled a ton, and he did the exact opposite. He went around trying to sue everybody for it.
He sued every single person who ever used it.
Yeah.
So that's a good comparison.
Yeah, it shows that it really comes down to the personality or reaction of the artist, or, you know, or more likely the record company or owners. So that's kind of funny.
So I guess you could say, to some extent, ownership is in the eye of
the owner,
the creator.
Yeah, yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I mean, we've had this discussion many times on Funk Radio before. The whole, you know, the where do you draw the line between copyright or plagiarism or creativity? Yeah. Now, me and you have gone through and listened to a lot of these drum break samples that are referenced in many different songs, and a lot of them sound really different, but they all you can tell it's there. Yeah. You can tell it's that same beat, but it's so altered and warped and morphed for the specific purposes of the songs often that it's hard to define. Like, is, you know, it's hard to pinpoint, okay, is that even the original guy's recording, or is that just, you know, someone else did that riff and recorded it.
That kind of circles back to how simple it is as well, is that it can be modified so easily,
mm-hmm.
like whether it's the tempo or maybe you change a few pieces of it. I mean, it's kind of like a platform for many different things.
Exactly. That's why when I first heard the drum break, I honestly thought it was some sort of like drumming scale. Like it's just a series of notes you play around the drums. That sounds cool, that a lot of people just happen to, you know, have learned or picked up in learning how to play the drums. And maybe that is a little bit of the case. Maybe because it's so famous, it's become like part of drumming culture, or it's just like, there's always this joke, because I used to play guitar in high school, there's always this joke that everyone who plays guitar, one of the first songs they learn is Smoke on the Water by, oh my God, wow, Deep Purple. It's a super simple guitar riff. It's not sampled anywhere else. It's just, it's in this song, but everyone who plays guitar learns that. And maybe this is the same thing with drums, where everyone that plays drums learns that drum break.
That would make sense. I don't play drums, or I don't know anyone who really does, but I would be really surprised if this wasn't a really common thing that a lot of drummers would learn early on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that being said, it adds to the mythos of like, where did it come from? Did the person who created, who in any particular song, is it a recording of the original song, or is it just a drummer doing that same riff? And that's where it becomes super murky, and where I think even the artist is just like, there's no way I can go after people for money for this.
Well, it's, this is kind of, I don't know why this is making me think of this, but it's kind of, in my mind, it's kind of compared to like in programming, you have what's called forking, where you have like one set of code and then you can fork it off into something like a different version of it. But then you can fork different versions off of that. And so with this, you know, you have the original drum break, but then over time with so many people doing different things with it, you know, other people may be copying the copies rather than the original.
Yeah.
So over time it becomes copies of copies.
Exactly. And that's probably the case with many very famous samples. I think we actually talked about this before as well. It's like, where do you pinpoint down the origin of something like that?
Hmm.
The funny thing being that even this particular song, Amen Break, is, or it's, sorry,
Amen Brother.
Amen Brother is sort of a pseudo rendition of a song called Amen by Jester Hairston. It's kind of an old gospel song from the 50s, from the 50s or early 60s, I don't remember.
Hmm.
So even this song, you know, the drum break itself isn't obviously riffed in from the original song, but this song is a rendition of an older song with a drum break that is, that has then gone on to ripple throughout music, I don't know, society.
I've even heard, you know, I know there are well-known covers of the full song in Amen Brother by other groups as well. So not only that one piece, but then just the entire song as well. I don't know if I've heard one that also utilizes that drum break. I don't think I have. But I'm sure there's some out there. But it doesn't really matter. So I guess now we can maybe discuss some examples of songs. Obviously, as we mentioned earlier, there's over 2,200 examples of songs. But you did bring up a good point, though, that, you know, even in just by listening to a few of these, you can hear such differences in how people interpret that drum break. It's not the exact same thing in every song by any means.
Yeah, it's very much been like warped and manipulated for different purposes, and pitch has been altered, speed has been altered. I think I heard one where I think it was in reverse. And so it's definitely gotten its use. Now, before we go into the, like, where a lot of different songs that play this are, should we talk about kind of the origin of how it propagated throughout, you know, many different musical genres?
Oh, yeah, sure. That makes sense, I guess.
I know, just because I was reading. Apparently, this drum break first got its break, pun intended, when this guy from this studio called Downstairs Records, he was an employee with them called Breakbeat Lenny. That was kind of his nickname. He compiled this loop, this drum loop, into this album he created in 1986 called Ultimate Breaks and Beats. It was kind of a bootleg, you know, series of different musical loops for DJs to use for spinning.
Yeah, I've seen records like that
Yeah.
before.
And this guy, Breakbeat Lenny, hired this guy, this other guy, Luis Flores, to edit four bars of the drum break into at a slower speed than the rest of the song, the rest of the original Amen Brother song. It created a jarring difference in tempo in the center of the song because they took that part and, you know, kind of stretched it out, basically. And it allowed a lot of hip-hop DJs to extend that beat, and by switching to extend the beat of their whatever, their song, from switching between two copies of the record on two separate turntables at matching tempos while ignoring the rest of the song. It sounds kind of confusing, but I guess as we kind of figured out from that show we watched, when DJs, you know, are DJing
for clarification, listeners, The Get Down on Netflix.
Thank you. When DJs are DJing, they have two turntables, one to their left and one to their right, and when they're switching between, I guess, from one record to another, they'll manually kind of slow the record down or speed it up to match tempos so they could switch over to the other side. It's almost like fading, kind of.
Yeah.
And I guess this particular drum break was very useful in that respect.
So that explains why it ended up being so popular in hip-hop, because I know that was exactly one of the biggest genres that kind of embraced this.
Yeah, so because of this, you know, this famous Ultimate Breaks and Beats kind of bootleg record, a lot of record producers began sampling it, and it caused the Amen Break to gain a massive amount of fame in very little time in the mid to late 80s hip-hop scene. And from there, it just spread like wildfire.
Cool.
So yeah, that's kind of I shouldn't say that's its origin, because its origin was the 1969 song, but that was its origin as...
That's how it became a function of hip-hop. Really popular as a sample.
Exactly.
But as we've seen, you know, in all the songs that sample it, it goes well beyond hip-hop. You were observing that it kind of extended a lot into early electronic music as well.
Yeah, there was a lot of... that I've seen and that I'm aware of, a lot of 90s and early 2000s electronic music that used it as well. So yeah, as Peter was saying earlier, that since this break is sampled in over 2,000 different songs, we went through and found some that we were kind of familiar with and that we've either talked about before or we just know because of the music that we like. I'd say probably one of the most famous uses of the drum break is in the song Straight Outta Compton by N.W.A., that came out in 88, so definitely right around that late 80s hip-hop time that we're talking about. And This one's easy to identify because it's right at the beginning of the song. That one's probably, from a fame standpoint, I would say is the most famous use of it. There's other ones that we can talk about that use it more interestingly. This one almost seems like a straight usage. No manipulation of it too much. But,
right.
Yeah, this is definitely the most probably widely recognized use of it for people that haven't heard the break before.
Well, let's give our listeners a little taste of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was Straight Outta Compton by M.W.A., the drum break used in the beginning of their song, rap, whatever. Another one that I recognize that is kind of interesting is its use in the song Mindfields by The Prodigy. We probably haven't talked about them on the show, but The Prodigy is a mid-90s sort of industrial electronic group. This one is definitely a interesting use of the drum break. It's definitely manipulated, and it's used throughout the song.
I had a really hard time. Like, if I can't really hear it. I mean, I hear there's drums going on, but it doesn't sound like this break. And so this is probably a really good example of like one of the really highly
manipulated,
or heavily manipulated ones.
Exactly. That's part of the reason I kind of wanted to mention it. Yeah, where N.W.A. is very much pretty much straight shot of the break, this is highly manipulated. God, I don't even know what they're using. I'm not familiar with the machinations of electronic music, but it sounds very different. We'll play a clip for you guys so you can see just how different it is. So yeah, that was the break from Mind Fields by Prodigy. Definitely very different, very interesting. I like the song, I like Prodigy, so... let me try to look at some other ones here. Another one that I saw that was pretty much a straight usage of it was the song I Desire by Salt-N-Pepa from 1986, so actually even before NWA. This one's pretty much kind of a straight usage of it. I don't notice a huge manipulation or altering of it, but I like Salt-N-Pepa. I don't know if we really talked about them a lot on the show. They're just a female rap duo. They sang the song Push It.
Mentioned them in passing.
Yeah.
Maybe once or twice.
They were famous because they were kind of the first really famous female rap duo. No, Queen Latifah was probably after them. Queen Latifah was like early 90s. But yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're cool. I don't think they still make rap, but they still go around and like DJ and show up at places. They're not.
That's cool.
And they're not dead. Yay.
Yay. Lonnie, should we hear a clip of
I Desire? The drum break from I Desire by Salt-N-Pepa. Yo, wait a minute, yeah. I want y'all to hear. My rap is not a joke for us, it's a career. Others try to imitate, but none has come near. So you see where everybody stands up and cheer. And if you really think about it, you know what it means to be a female rapper from the heart of Queens. This one's definitely one of the more famous ones as well. Just because of the famousness. Famousness? Is that a word? Whatever. of... Shut up. Of Salt-N-Pepa.
And yeah, you are right that it is a bit closer to the original and how it's used.
Exactly.
Now, without looking at this list, I'm just curious. Like, when you heard the drum break when listening to Amen Brother for the first time,
yeah,
did you automatically think of any songs?
No. I've definitely have heard it before and I recognized its beat, I guess, pretty much instantly. But it didn't call out any one specific song to me. And maybe that is due to the fact that it's used in so many different songs. It looks like the Salt-N-Pepa version in 1986 is actually the earliest major use of it. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yay. Other early uses of it outside of, obviously, NWA was it was used by Ultramagnetic MCs in Watch Me Now. They're another 80s group. Anybody else I recognize? Ghetto Boys, One Time Freestyle. Oh, did we want to talk about Heavy D and the Boys? Because I know we've talked about them on the show before.
Sure.
Heavy D and the Boys, they're in late 80s rap outfit. The song Let It Flow, it's under record scratching, so it's a little bit harder to discern. But it's definitely there. I'm rough and tough, all that stuff called my bluff. You can't get enough from Mr. Big Stuff, Let It Flow. I was thinking actually when I heard this one, I wonder if a lot of rap and hip hop people found usage out of this because there's a kick drum in the beat, obviously, and if you amplify that in any way, you can create some good bass sounds from it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, rap loves its bass. It's all about that bass. So I wonder if that's kind of a reason that a lot of rap and hip hop people flocked to it because it kind of had that like hard kicking bass sound to it, you know.
That's a good point.
Electronic, you could say the same thing. They always put like deep heavy sounds in there,
and yeah, you
can alter them in ways to make them even lower, or crazier sounding. So yeah, I've kind of been rambling about artists that I recognize. Are there any songs you recognize that I haven't mentioned, Peter?
No, I'm still trying to go through this list as we're talking, and I'm really not seeing anything. Unfortunately, I kind of wish that I could speak, you know, to more of these, but it's one of those things where there's so much that uses this that it's, you know, it's not a very specific subset of music or even genres.
True. And it's like we mentioned before, it really wasn't used before 1986. So unless you're familiar with a lot of post-1986 music, you're not going to know a lot of it. And we here on Funk Radio mostly talk about music before that time period.
Right. We usually talk about stuff that's in the era of the original song.
Exactly.
By the Winstons.
Exactly. No offense to you, Peter, you're not going to recognize a lot of like 90s electronic.
I think that's part of the problem, is that I'm just not aware of that.
Yeah, I know a few of them because I like electronic music, and our mutual friend Dan has introduced me to a lot of these, but even me going through this, I'm like, okay, I recognize like maybe a dozen out of 2,000. So
listeners, that's the gist of the Amen Break.
If you guys know of any other songs that are recognizable that use it, you can let us know, because we've kind of ran the gamut as far as the ones we've heard of.
Yeah. As we said, that's a very, very small number from small the entire section. Set. So, that's a good point. If you listeners can think of any songs that use this, send us a link to it on our Facebook page at facebook.com/getyourfunk. Or if you're on SoundCloud, you can put a comment on our track and yell at us for not mentioning your favorite song that uses this thing. And if you can't think of any, tell us on Facebook or SoundCloud that you can't think of any.
Just talk to us, please. Terrible. This has been your host, Kyle.
And this has been your host, Peter. Join us next time for more things.
Bye. We love you.
Bye.